for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. And that's BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Give me a call. Let's have a yarn, you deadly mob. Too deadly. All right, fantastic. I'm going to catch up with a beautiful lady by the name of Liz McKinley, Professor Liz, Executive Director, Atlantic Fellows for Social Equity. And applications are open for this fantastic organization. And I've got Professor Liz online to tell us all about it. A very good morning, my sister. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, as we say to a beautiful guest, who your mob were you from, Liz? Who's Liz McKinley, my sister?
Yeah, so I'm actually from New Zealand. I'm Ngatikaha Nuniki Wairarapa and Ngāi Tahu.
Beautiful.
So I'm a New Zealand Māori.
Yeah, we claim you, my sister. So you're the Executive Director, Atlantic Fellows. So before we go any further, let the mob know who and what is Atlantic Fellows.
So the Atlantic Fellows is a fellowship program, a 12-month fellowship program. We are a program that's funded by the Atlantic Philanthropies, which is a US-based philanthropic organisation. Mm-hmm. And it is a program that is based here in Melbourne, where we live at the moment, and mm-hmm. it is a program for Indigenous peoples. It's Indigenous-led in terms of our program, in terms of myself as the Executive Director, but also the team that we've got. It is it caters for Indigenous peoples from both Australia and New Zealand who are there, and you can apply to come and see us mm-hmm. or join us. The program is a year-long program, really, that that has a bit of study in it.
Yes.
As well as learning on country with peoples, both in New Zealand and Australia.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. So with that, you were talking about successful applicants have 12 months with the program, and then they work with MOB here in Australia as well as New Zealand and become students as such by our professors, our elders, yes?
Yes, that's right. So the students, their fellows do enrol. They have to enrol in a postgraduate course here in Melbourne, and basically courses taught online and also on country. So we actually have both professors from the university and we also have our professors, as you say, mm. within our mobs, on country.
Mm, yes.
We have some that are involved in the program quite closely in terms of helping us design some of the program, as well as teach it on country, as well as teaching it here. So we draw on very knowledgeable Indigenous professors within the university as well, the likes of, you know, people like Marcia Langton and others here at Melbourne. Will be helping to teach into the program as well.
Beautiful. So, look, it's a fantastic program as such, and to be successful in the application, how do people go about it, brothers and sisters? Is it only open to brothers and sisters or our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as well?
Yes. So, while an Indigenous-led program, and we are committed to Indigenous change.
Yes. Yep.
For Indigenous peoples. It is open to non-Indigenous people as well.
Sure.
There are a few places, can I say, that we are committed to taking on Indigenous scholars, but the non-Indigenous applicants need to show that they've been working successfully with Indigenous organisations and communities.
Good. Fantastic. Fantastic. And so Atlantic Fellows, Fellowship, where do they get their monies from? Is the government funded or how's that work?
No, it's not. So the Atlantic Fellows is funded from a US-based philanthropic group called the Atlantic Philanthropies Foundation.
Yep.
They fund a lot of things, but they fund 7 programs across the world, and we're one of those. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. I'm just looking at figures here. Committed over US $660 million worldwide. So they've got a bit of coin, haven't they?
They have got a bit of coin. There's no doubt about that.
So with all that money, they've got a big heart, you could say, as well.
Yes, they have. And they have funded programs both in the US, in Britain, in South Africa, and in Southeast Asia. So they have quite a spread of programs that are dealing with the same things that we're dealing with. It's either health inequalities or social inequalities, basically.
Fantastic. And, look, it's great for our mob and plus our brothers and sisters in New Zealand, your mob, getting educated about our ancestors. And with that information, well, it becomes like a network, don't they, in regarding educating people of the world about our beautiful culture, yes?
Absolutely. So the fellows, and when they graduate and become alumni or senior fellows, we call them, they get to go and meet many of these people from the other organisations, for the other Atlantic fellows across the world. And can I just want to say, Trevor, that the fellows are never out of pocket. Yeah.
Okay.
So when we do all this travel and our work, everything's paid for. You know, anything that's associated with the program is paid for. So this it should never cost them anything. And in terms of other types of support, there are all sorts of support that we can give them.
Sure.
In terms of if they have to take leave from work and things like that, we can help make up some of that pay and some of that will work with their employers. Yeah.
Well, the philanthropic money is a good investment.
It is a great investment.
Yes.
So we pay, at the moment, you know, the Atlantic Fellows will pay for all their fees and accommodation wherever we take them, travel wherever we take them, anything that's associated with the program we pay for. So there's a big investment right there. And then on top of that, we can support people who need. So there's a bigger fund. They also get, they have to do a project as part of this program.
Yes.
They have to do a social change project. And part of that is that we will support them with money as well in terms of their social change projects. So there is all sorts of financial support that is available.
Fantastic. Well, I've always said never begrudge the money you put on your own education. And so to me, like I said, it's not an expensive investment in the individuals as such, but on this fantastic organisation, and to educate the people of the world about our beautiful culture, both Australia and New Zealand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there are lots of opportunities, even as fellows and senior fellows, to join those networks across the world.
Yeah, fantastic.
To do exactly that.
Beautiful. And I'm about to catch up very soon, have a deadly yarn with Daryl Rigney. He's a senior fellow. So do you know much about that deadly brother?
I know Daryl on a professional basis because we're both academics.
Sure.
So I've learnt, you know, I know him from that. And recently we worked together on a book, not a whole book, but he wrote a chapter on a book that I was editing. So
okay,
I know Daryl and the good work that he does and the work he's been trying to do for his people. Unfortunately, I wasn't the executive director when he came through the program.
Sure, so, okay, no worries. Looking forward to having a deadly yarn with him. My sister, I love the program. I think it's fantastic. Now, you're saying applications are open. For people to apply, what sort of background do they need? Do they need to come from a certain industry or will one be black mainly? But paint that picture.
Yeah, so basically the people that we want are probably mid-career people. So the people with a little bit of experience, actually, Trevor. We want people who have had time to do some work in with their passion, you know, whatever that social change project might be that they're looking at, or the social change. And so we want people, I sort of pictured about in their mid to late 30s, early 40s, that sort of area. So that they still have plenty of time in their career to go out and make some big changes, but they have had a little bit of experience before
life
they come
experience,
in.
Yes.
So they, mainly Indigenous peoples are going to be selected for this. That's what we're looking for. But there are, as I said before, room for non-Indigenous who are allies and who have been working as well.
Fantastic. So how do they go about the application?
Yeah, so the application's on the website. If they just search for Atlantic Fellows for Social Equity, our website will come up for them.
Good.
And there is a button you can push to apply.
Lovely.
Yeah?
Lovely.
top right-hand side, there's something with a circle and it says in the middle, apply. And so they can go through the process. It's all electronic. It'll take you through.
Beautiful. So seeking for students to be with a big heart, with a vision and with a passion for our mob and our culture, both Australia and New Zealand, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You're dead on there.
Fantastic. Well, beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing, Professor Liz. All the best to you, my sister. Look, take care and the world we live in. Stay safe and regarding COVID-19. But this is a beautiful organisation and thank you very much for sharing with the fantastic information, my sister.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Trevor.
All the best to you. You take care, Sister Liz.
You too. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A beautiful yarn there with Professor Liz McKinley, her name is, Executive Director, Atlantic Fellows for Social Equity. So all you deadly mob out there, if you're around the age of 30 and above and you're looking for a vehicle, so to speak, and regarding getting your thoughts, your ideas, your passion out there to help our mob or to get educated with our mob and help educate the people of the world of our beautiful culture here in Australia and New Zealand. And look, there's a fantastic opportunity there. And they say that if you prepare yourself for the opportunity will present itself. So there it is. Atlantic Fellows, Google that, Atlantic Fellows, and you find the application there. And look, you get world trips and what have you, and everything's all paid for by the Atlantic Philanthropies that started back in 2016 and very wealthy business people in America. And look, they've committed over $660 million worldwide. And one of the program is the Atlantic Fellows. So a great platform for a great opportunity to enhance your life and educational of our mob and our culture. Too deadly. Have your say. Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. That deadly number is 1-800-422-416. Call the number Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie. I'm your host for your deadly program, National Talk Black. And we're live here at First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bummerbrit Media, 99.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. So give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
G'day you mob, this is Tanya Kernigan with Trendy Trev and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Yeah, too deadly mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, BBM Bummerbrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. I believe we've got someone on the line. Someone, good morning. You there, someone? I'm trying to get someone back. Lost someone. Someone, give me a call back. Lost you there, my brother. Ready to have a yarn with you. Too deadly. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black.
Granddad came from Jamaica. He was a black man, Jamaican black man. He came sailing on the seven seas, hard of hand, a sailor man, taking treasures from the sea. Granddad came from the loyalty, a woman fine of a chiefly line, said goodbye to her family urgently.
Yeah, too deadly, that Island Man, and that's Uncle Seaman Dan with his deadly track, Island Man, here on your daily program, National Talk Black. I'll go back to Selwyn. You there, Selwyn? Good morning.
Yes, I am.
Hey, brother.
My brother.
Go ahead. Yes, all good.
Okay, brother. Yeah, brother, I wanted to be the first caller this morning. You know, the saying, when you thought you knew all the answers, they changed the question. Well, the caller that Greg made, the same question, brother. You know, it's the same question. Brother, you remember the shooting down at the Luna, the drive-by shooting with the ATF rifle, brother?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're going to speak up against racism, it normalized racism. And I wanted to be, that's why I wanted to be the first cavalry. What Greg was talking about, he attacked us on the ethnicity, brother. Mm. And what's the matter for law and order, brother? Law and order. And those questions were answered. Remember Vernon Kinchin, 86, 87, when he had stuff to say? And the mob went up there, a delegation went up there to confront him about what he said in the Australasian Post. Well, since Greg was talking, there's Bomber Healing, there's Diversity Center, there's Lime Street, and they have the Move On Powers, brother. And I want to give him a few ideas how I feel when he attacks us on ethnicity. All those people that they're from Dora Bendo or Shorebeg or Palm Island or Yarraba. You know, there are a lot of different people here in Cairns that we can apply. But I want to give you an idea. I want to give you three very attacks on it and the ethnicity. I think you better score if you want to John McKenzie or letter to the editor. But I often know about it. But Gentle Morrow Shane, brother, why for a walk off walk off the street and he done a tweet. Erica Leary, brother, that taxi driver that picked up outside and phoned from a public phone on Red Link Road after he took up after that swearing again, Coranda, and his body was on the road there, brother.
Yes.
There's one more. That why did a 60-year-old white boy was in Saturday Cairns talking about syringe over there near Cave. The next day he put that Japanese girl in a wheelie bin.
Yes.
He took him over there with thing. And there are three examples. If we were to attack them on the ethnicity, brother, but we all say, why should I say the obvious reaction? They say, no, it's a law and order problem, it's about crime. Same way with the mobile with the Chris, brother. It's a law and order problem, not because of ethnicity, brother. Thank you very much, brother.
No, thank you very much, Sowen. Sowen, have any say there? A regular caller here on National Talk Black. You too can call and have your say. Jan Armstrong here on National Talk Black. 1-800-422-416. Jan with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakuri, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Number again, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother, 045-714-0050. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Too deadly. Very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakuri, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, fantastic. I'm going to catch you with a daily brother now, but by the name of Daryl Rigney, who's a senior fellow, past program participant of the Atlantic Fellows program. I was lucky enough to have a beautiful conversation with Professor Liz McKinley, executive director of that fantastic program. And I got brother Daryl on the line. Daryl, good morning. How are you?
Very good, Killiwee Tim. Killiwee
Trevor. Trendy Trev.
Yeah, sorry.
All good, my brother, all good. Look, thank you for coming to the program. First of all, before we start, brother, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Yeah, sure. I describe myself as a citizen of the Ngurrindjeri Nation, which is an Aboriginal nation here in southern South Australia, at the bottom end of the River Murray system as it moves into the Lower Lakes and Coorong region of South Australia.
Too deadly, brother.
My country.
Yeah, beautiful. Good footprint there. Now, you wear many hats, but look, you were one of the senior fellow past program participant of the Atlantic Fellows, and I just got educated by Sister Liz McKinley, Professor Liz, about the program and the work that they're doing regarding, and applications are open for First Nation people, both Australia and New Zealand, to apply to be enrolled with Indigenous-led lifelong collaborative fellowship program. And you were one of those past program participants. So tell us about that program first and how you got involved, my brother.
Sure. Look, so I've been around working, as an educator primarily, but also moving into cultural heritage management and natural resource management, thinking about governance and nation building for, the last 2 decades, 20 years of work in that area. And my current role is as the director of the Indigenous Nations and Collaborative Futures Research Hub at the University of Technology Sydney, the Jumbunna Institute, where I'm a professor there. And so this kind of work that I've been doing in the nation building work and thinking about how do you change policy so that it actually enables us as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to make decisions for our future is kind of what's guided me in all that time thinking that stuff through. And what the Atlantic Fellows Program offered me was an opportunity, to have some time out where I could really begin to think, not more deeply, because I've been thinking deeply about the issues that affect us for a long time, but giving me some space and time to really think that through and how to translate that into action and doing things in terms of trying to make things better for the community. So the program is around social equity, so how do we do that, And the project that I came into the fellowship with was around treaty. We'd been, the Ngunnawalli Nation had set up a regional authority back in 2007 to guide the governance of our community and our nation. I'd been actively involved in that with the Ngunnawalli leadership, and we'd set up our own regional authority. That regional authority kicked some goals. We won the Australian River Prize in 2015. For river management in Australia, and that then led us the state government to saying, "Hey, this regional authority is doing some things, it's kicking some goals."
Exactly, a tiger with teeth, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely, and so then kind of question for them was, might this work for other nation groups in South Australia? And so, that's really, it's up to other nation groups to determine how they want to govern themselves. So. But there were some ideas in and all of that. What that ultimately led to was the recognition of regional authorities in South Australia by the state government and the policy. And then ultimately they went to into a came to us and said, look, we want to actually talk treaty. This is the previous government in South Australia. And so my project was around around treaty, sort of how to build on the work that we'd already been doing in the community and in the nation to think about what would a treaty look like. If we were into a negotiation process, how would that unfold? What would be things that we'd be looking to introduce into that process? And really what we talked about from a Ngunnawalli perspective was a new relationship with the state. We wanted a new relationship, not an extension of an old relationship that didn't work, not simply staying in service delivery programs, but thinking about how do we actually move towards a position where we get the opportunity to have greater jurisdiction and self-govern. And so that's the project I took into the Atlantic Fellows program. And over the course of the program, which was a year-long program, 60 face-to-face days and then a lot of other stuff not face-to-face, other work and reading and thinking, what I came to the position was that the treaty was important. Treaty was a really important mechanism to build a new relationship, but the treaty was just that. It was a tool. It was a tool for actually rebuilding our nation and to stop thinking that treaty was going to be the answer to everything, but that actually treaty was just another tool along with all the other things that we had, all the other technologies that we had that enabled us to rebuild our nation so that we were able to kind of claim governance and claim jurisdiction and try to make things better in the level of the community.
So, that's so you find the Atlantic Fellows program was enhancing your vision or your project regarding treaty?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
The Atlantic Fellows kind of purpose is to provide a platform for Indigenous-led systemic social change. Well, that's straight up says straight away, hey, that's the place I want to be.
Yes.
You know, I want to be able to think about that. And the kind of principles around fellowship and custodianship and narrative change and lifelong learning, all kinds of things that sat really comfortably with me. So the program, you know, as I was reading it, gave me some time to think and gave me a really good environment, a really good environment in which to do that. The environment that, that was both the kind of, you know, formal program we had, but I got to say that, you know, it was the informal program that develops in and around your connection and your collaboration and speaking with a bunch of other people, other fellows who are interested in social change and who come at a different projects, different places, you know, whether it's health or education or business sector or social campaigning or the environmental kind of program or think about flourishing. They're the kinds of things that were the other fellows brought. And so you're in this kind of relationship with these people who are, you know, just terrific people bringing ideas, you know, and when you
But they support your ideas, your passion, your vision, and money's the tool, and there it is at the table to enhance you to make this come to fruition, so to speak, regarding the project.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it does. You know, it provides you with that opportunity to be with a bunch of people who want to make a difference, and that people who want to make a difference give you ideas. And so hanging around smart people with good ideas, it's a good thing.
Well, they save you later in a dog, you wake up with fleas, my brother. Association is the key. Look, it's fantastic. So the applications are open for brothers and sisters, Australia and New Zealand, to apply to become a participant of the Atlantic Fellows, but also there's opportunity for non-Indigenous brothers and sisters to apply as well, as long as they're working with our mob or been working in that space. So it's a great opportunity, yes?
Oh, yes, it is. And you know, that's it's important because, you know, the centre that I direct is called Indigenous Nations and Collaborative Futures, really emphasising the idea of collaborative futures. Yeah, it has to be fundamentally Indigenous-led. You know, that is a non-negotiable. But, you know, lots of people from beyond our community have ideas that are worth listening to, some that are not, and some that you want to challenge. And, you know, that's one of the things about fellowship. It's not a network of friends who just get together and all agree.
No, sure.
It's actually about being in fellowship where you get to present your ideas and people have the opportunity to feed into that, then which provides you with more ideas and thoughts and things to consider as you try and build your program. So, you know, drawing on good ideas is the thing. You know, I often say that I've got a promiscuity with ideas, you know. Like, I'm ready to listen to any idea. you know...
Well, your mind's like a parachute. If it's not open, you're cactus, brother.
That's right. So you don't have to take them all on, aren't they?
Exactly. Look, it's a fantastic opportunity for our go-getters out there who've got a vision and got an idea but can't put no coin on the table. And the Atlantic philanthropies have done a fantastic job. They're committed over $660 million worldwide, and this is one of the programs that they commit to. So no problems with coin there, and it's fantastic to build a strong foundation so you can build your vision on, yes?
Yes, Trevor, that's right. And because, you know, I've talked so far about the Atlantic Fellows for Social Equity program based here in Melbourne, Australia, but this is part of a global network.
Okay,
the global
yes.
network, you know, is in health equity, in race equity, in social and economic equity, in sites like San Francisco and Dublin and London and Johannesburg and Hanoi, Bangkok, you know. So you become part of an international network of thinkers in that beautiful... That's a beautiful spot to be, I reckon.
Yeah, fantastic, you know. And they say knowledge is power, but I like to say knowledge is potential power, and we've got to be doing something with that knowledge, you know, to make it happen.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's not just... You can't just be a talk fest and a set of ideas that don't go anywhere. You got to apply them.
Well, exactly, yeah. I've been in university for 30 years and you've got 45 degrees, but are you going to do anything with that information, cuss? Or what we try?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I got
professional student.
Oh, that's right. I got introduced a long time ago by a white South African minister of the church, who is one of the most radical and political people I've ever met, who talked about the need to raise our awareness and our consciousness, connect with those who are doing the work, and then do something yourself. And
yes.
Maori mentor of mine who once said to me, show me your blistered hand and I'll shake it. You know, I want to see you doing the work, not just
exactly.
talking the ideas.
Exactly. Well, the only time our success becomes for work is in the dictionary, my brother.
Yeah. So, the Atlantic program, I'm a huge advocate for it, not just because I've been through it, but I can see its potential. I'm part of a network of people, and it provides, some wonderful space for me to be in.
Lovely, beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing, my friend. Look, all the best to you. We still live in COVID-19 world, so you stay safe, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Daryl, great talking with you, my brother, and all the best, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Kiwi.
You take care, brother. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
A deadly yarn there with Daryl Rigney, a senior fellow, past program participant of the Atlantic Fellows program. So, look, applications are open. Google Atlantic Fellows. If you are a black person, they have a vision for your idea, your concept, and helping our mob. And that's both Australia and New Zealand. Our brothers and sisters over in New Zealand as well. Applicants can apply. So check out Atlantic Fellows. But also for non-Indigenous brothers and sisters who've been working in the space of looking after our mob, Australia and New Zealand, and not Johnny come lately. If you're working in there, you're passionate about it, you too can apply. I mean, I say throw the iron in fire, see if it lights up. Look, a fantastic opportunity to enhance your vision and your passion, and also working with some very successful and highly educated people, and there's money at the table, everything's all supplied. So by the Atlantic Philanthropies, as I mentioned, who committed over $660 million worldwide, and one of the programs that they commit to is Atlantic Fellows. So there's a bit of coin there. That's fantastic. Open up doors and opportunities for you to set a strong foundation for your vision, but helping our mob. Fantastic. All right, your mob, have your say. Yarn up strong on National Talk Black. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. For many people, paying for essential goods and services is a struggle, yet going without is worse. Without a fridge, you can't store fresh food. Without a computer, kids can be left behind at school. And if you can't afford the medical care you need, you can't get well. The No Interest Loan Scheme, NILS, offers people on low income safe, fair and affordable loans for fridges, washing machines and furniture, as well as education and medical expenses. Loans cannot be used for rent, arrears or bills. To be eligible for NILS, you must have a health care or pension card. Earn under $45,000, $60,000 for joint applicants or people with children. And you must be able to repay the loan. NILS is based on trust and respect.
To inquire about NILS loans, call Shaq in Cairns on 4080-7400. That's 4080-7400. Shaq is a local NILS provider for Good Shepherd Microfinance.
Station sponsor.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, at BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your saber calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, we're living in a different world at the moment thanks to COVID-19, and it has affected a lot of industries, but not so much the agricultural land prices that defy COVID-19 economic downturn. The description is port in a storm. We're going to catch up a yarn now with, we've got Wes on the line, Wes Lefroy. He's the report author for Rabobank Agriculture Analyst. On the line, Wes, a very good morning. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Trevor. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, yeah, the COVID-19 has virtually turned the world upside down, and especially economy and businesses. But what you're saying regarding your research, that the farmers of this country, Australia, the Big Island, have virtually treaded water and, in a way, come unscathed to a certain degree, yeah?
So from an agricultural land price perspective, we do think Australian ag land will remain, well, prices of ag land will hold firm during 2020, and this is despite the severe global recession that we are facing that will continue to cause a significant depreciation in most global and local asset classes. But there will be some variations. Some sectors and some regions will be hit harder than others. But on the whole, we do expect that Australian ag land prices will remain firm.
I suppose it's probably different
for farmers.
Yeah, it's probably different in regard to farmers, in regard to what they produce, so to speak. You mentioned just off air there, but dairy, that's more impact for the dairy farmers there.
Yeah, it does. So different sectors across Australia service different markets. So some service local markets,
yes,
and some service offshore markets. Today, we have seen the impacts of COVID-19 be stronger offshore, and given for those sectors that do are heavily reliant on that offshore demand, that as a result, they might be impacted more by COVID-19 rather than others.
Sure.
This economic crisis will continue to linger throughout 2020, and we're likely to see some effects into 2021 as well, that's for sure. So, there will be some variation between sectors and also regions where those sectors, where that those products are produced.
So majority farm profitability, also low supply, supportive fundamentals, risk, all that comes into the equation, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So really there's three reasons why we are expecting Australian ag land to hold firm. And as you mentioned there, we expect farm profits will remain positive through 2020 for many farmers across the country. And that's primarily because we have seen an improvement in seasonal conditions across the country, particularly on the east coast through drought-affected regions. We have seen an increase in rain, which will help production. But also, we expect on the low supply front, we do expect that the number of properties on the market will remain tight, which will support prices.
So I suppose the best thing we can do as Australians is to buy locally, buy Australian, and support each other. This is the so-called phrase, we are all in this together, puts a different spin on that meaning, doesn't it?
It does. Sorry, the gardeners just started...
Is that right? The See, farming's going good.
The gardeners just started the leaf blower outside my window, so if you want to wait...
All good.
10 seconds before he walks away.
All good. Thank you, Gardner. He's supporting the agricultural industry, isn't he?
Yeah. Do you want to ask me the question again?
Sorry, I was just saying in regards to all our farmers and the produce in this country, we're as Australian, we need to buy Australian produce to support the industry, support this country, support jobs and the farm industry, yeah, agricultural industry.
Yeah, it absolutely helps supporting Australian farmers and ensuring that local demand for Australian products are strong. I think the Australian agriculture industry has a lot of positive stories, and certainly the resilience of the sector that we've seen throughout this crisis and the way the sector has worked together to be able to endure some of particularly the logistical challenges really has been a positive.
What's your thought on regarding companies or produce being sold off or farms being sold off to international buyers?
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of positive aspects to foreign investment into Australian ag land. Australian ag land is an attractive proposition for foreign investors. And in a lot of cases, it has provided the capital for farmers to be able to expand, off of those farms to be able to expand, to be able to bring investment into local regions, but also, in a lot of cases, it's also increased the employment in those local regions. So we do see a lot of opportunities for foreign investment, but also the Foreign Investment Review Board plays a role to make sure that's in the that investment is in the nation's best interests.
In the nation's best interest regarding employment and keeping produce in this country, yeah?
Oh, sorry, so ensuring that the investment in agricultural land is in the best interest of the country.
Yeah, sure, on all facets. Look, a very important conversation. Thank you very much for sharing. Supporting our farmers out there. That's what we need to do as Australians. Thank you very much for bringing the information to the table here. Wes, all the best to you and your team and your family. Stay safe. We're still not out of the woods yet with COVID-19.
Thanks, Trevor. You too.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there. His name is Wes Lefroy. He's a rapport author, a Rabobank agriculture analyst, and talking about Australian agricultural land prices to defy COVID-19 economic downturn. So the farmers were sitting pretty in regard to COVID-19. A lot of industries were affected by COVID-19 in more ways than one, but our farmers stood strong in regard to not a lot of effect with COVID-19. So they were still producing an essential industry as such in regarding feeding this country, and we've got plenty of food, don't worry, in this country, so we are doing good in that degree. But there's a message: support Australia by purchasing only Australian products. There you go. Let's do that, you mob. Too deadly. Have you say yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. Yarn with Bully Run, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. That number, 1-800-422-416. Give me a call, let's have a yarn, you mob. Too deadly.
Been stumbling home all by myself at night, telling the streetlights that I'm doing fine. Those empty bottles laying by my bed tell me I'm getting pretty good at this. Lately whiskey's going down faster than it used to do. So give me one more round and one for the road. Someone cut me off, I won't be drinking over you. Oh, about the last thing she said, spins like a carousel inside my head. The hangover, it only makes it worse, tells me that I'm not really over her. Lately whiskey's going down faster than it used to do. So give me one more round.
Drinking Over You, Busby Maru here on your deadly program, National Talk Black, that deadly album, Great Divide, and coming to you live here, First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We've got Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not so bad today, mate. I've had a really good run with the local press.
And, yes, I'm looking here in the Cairns Post on Saturday morning. Was grieving husband in fight for second plot. So, look, you got in the Cairns Post in regarding your fight for your plot next to your lovely lady Donna. But it isn't confirmed that you got the plot. Is that right, for the gravesite?
No, it's still a stonewall standoff. And I really want to thank the Cairns Post for that article they put in. It came out on my birthday on the 27th there, and the editor and the reporter and the photo of the grave. I was actually there, and Thurlow was going off. Warren Inch there, and I didn't hear that, and I missed it. I think that was a highlight. Anyway, yeah, I want to thank the Cairns Post. And this morning I had a really breakthrough. They let me talk on the John McKenzie 4CA show.
Oh, did they really? Good.
Really, mate? Oh, yes, I'm breaking new ground here, and because it's not radical, it concerns everybody, you know, and would you know.
Well, it does. It concerns everybody exactly, you know. I mean, we will go to meet our maker one day, but we're going to pay to get out of it. But how do we go about it? I mean, can they stop us from, you know, say, putting money down for the plot? So that's the question that needs to be answered.
It's a catch-22 situation. Do you understand catch-22?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, explain.
It's a thing from a war film called Catch-22, and people wanted to get out of the going to Vietnam, where in the end they found out no one gave a damn. But they did. Some people didn't want to go, and so they'd say they were mad, or you know, and then they'd say back to them, well, you can't be if you know that yourself. It's a catch-22. It goes round and round.
Yeah.
I really appreciate John letting me talk this morning, and I said the funeral things, it's for us, being a black and white couple, it's the ultimate segregation.
Yes.
And it's turned into a greedy dollar dictated double dipping council racket based on death with no compassion or understanding of individual circumstances. And I'm sure that, as John said, there's others. And I have to get things in order while I'm alive. No one else can do this for me. So I'll leave that because John said he's going to talk to Brett Moller, the Gordonvale councillor.
Sure. And find out what the go is.
I've made the progress, and the ABC were really did what they could, but they've been sort of just up against no real answers.
Yes.
And I've got a whole heap of stuff photocopied yesterday, and that article, and I'm going to start posting them up. I don't hear so. I want to move on. I'm sorry that this is on the national show because I missed the local show, but the whole nation, this can affect anybody.
Of course.
It can affect anybody anywhere. I heard you yesterday say Sam Bakker was asking Warren Inch for some constitution papers, ain't?
Yeah, that's right. And apparently they can only hand out one constitution for one person. But Sam wanted to get the constitution handed out on the march that he's organising here in Cairns on Friday, Black Lives Matter and Black Deaths in Custody. And that's apparently a no. He only gets one constitution. I thought that's weird.
I have something that may help. It's called the Oath of Allegiance, what we've come to know as the Bloody Oath. It's an Australian saying, ain't Bloody
Oath. Bloody Oath, yep.
Yeah, so I want to read out the Oath of Allegiance, and it's about the Queen and what she promises to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says, I do, since this is part of the British Constitution, I do, which is the Commonwealth of Australia, I do sincerely promise and swear, this is, that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II as lawful sovereign of Australia and her other realms and territories, and to her heirs and successors according to law. And this is called an act establishing the coronation oath of 1689. This goes before Australia was discovered. I want to read, and it says, whereas by the law and ancient usage of this realm, the kings and queens thereof have taken a solemn oath upon the evangelists and their respective coronations to maintain the statutes, laws, and customs of the said realm, and all the people and inhabitants thereof in their spiritual and civil rights and properties. And this covers a lot.
Covers all angles, doesn't it?
Yeah, mate, this is really important. It's I picked a lot of this stuff from the 10th Embassy, and it's valid, and I'm reprinting it. But for as much as the oath itself on such administered as they have been framed in doubtful words and expressions with relation to ancient laws and constitutions at this time unknown to the end, therefore that one uniform oath may be in all times to come taken by kings and queens of the realm and to them respectively administered at the times of their and every of their coronation. And then, I miss a bit, it's all about archbishops and too much to read. The archbishop will say, will you solemnly promise and swear to govern the people of this kingdom of England and the dominions thereto belonging to the statutes in Parliament agreed on and the laws and customs of same? And the king and queen shall say, I solemnly promise to do so. Will you to your power cause law justice and mercy executed in all your judgments, then the king and the queen, or king and queen, my will. And then after this, the king and queen, laying his and her hand upon the holy gospels, shall say, the things which I have here before promised I will perform and keep, so help me God. Then the king and queen shall kiss the book. Well, you know, I wouldn't let them kiss, well, anyway, I won't comment on that. I don't want to near my ass anyway. And it be enacted that the said oath shall be in like manner administered to every king and queen who shall succeed to the imperial crown of this realm and their respective coronations of the realm of England. So, you know, I've got tons of this stuff, and it's more and more relative and added because it's what we call the bloody bullshit oath, you know.
Exactly.
So I hope people can take that in, that with the march on...
on Friday, yeah, that's right, exactly, yeah.
That's why I've been requesting on the show there, Revolution by the Beatles, because it's not about destruction, and it's the best of British message that I can send to the Aboriginal people, that they're completely within their rights.
Of course.
According to this act, and I'll be at the march.
Beautiful. No, that's right. And they're talking COVID safety as well, so that's all good. And the march is at 9 a.m. and they're walking from the Cairns Post Hospital in from the skate park there all the way down the Esplanade and then to Fogarty Park. And 10 a.m. they'll have the speeches and yarns and all mob getting together and doing safety in regard to COVID-19 as well.
Yeah, all that and... I'm just a paperboy, so don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, thanks for sharing, my brother. And it's great that you're making mainstream now regarding your fight for your plot next to your lovely sister there, Donna. And yeah, it is about fighting a good fight, isn't it, brother?
Yeah, it is. There's good and bad, you know, to simplify things. And I could go on that show with a non-radical and I'm happy to make that broke through. And I thank Paul CA, the ABC... you and the whole station.
Well, we had yarns here on Murray Radio, which is good. Then it made mainstream, so that's fantastic that you've got a leg to stand on, so to speak.
Yeah, mate, the Cairns Post, like I said, it was a birthday present to come out on that day because he gave me really credibility and some ammunition to work with, you know.
Mm. Well, I got the news coming up, my brother. We'll talk soon. All the best, Tony. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Bye.
See you, brother. Deadly Yarn there with Tony Gibbs there. Murray going to sign off your mob. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416, the number of National Talk Black. Yarn with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, and live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM, Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Radio Service. Too deadly.
I'll be sleeping under stars tonight, not sure exactly where I'll be. Maybe underneath the pale moonlight, or maybe underneath that tree. Black smoke, riding in the sky tonight.